You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, christianhumanist.org.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the City of Man podcast. You might not recognize my voice, but this is, in fact, Ed Song. I am an associate professor of philosophy at Westmont College in Santa Barbara, California. With me, as always, is Coyle Neal, assistant professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University. Good to talk to you again, Coyle. It's been a while.
It has been. Couple of months at least.
Yeah, you know, I can't, what was the last time we actually recorded together? It was
Western Civ, I think, which we haven't dropped yet.
Really? Anyways, it's been a while. So apologies. So first of all, thanks to you. You've been prolific in your recording of episodes. I apologize. A lot of people are going to be like, Ed was gone? And some people are going to be like, oh, he's back. But anyways, I do apologize. I've just been swamped. August is the cruelest month. I mean, August is always the cruelest month for any academic just because you're ramping back up.
Sure.
But there, for us, there were just a number of additional things going on, school things, but like on top of the normal things, and it just set me back 2 full weeks, and I've just been scrambling to get back. Finally, my head is back above water at this point, but I'm looking forward to recording more and hanging out and talking and stuff.
Yeah, I always find it helpful to take those sorts of things and just blame them on the wife and kids. It makes me feel better about myself.
In my case, they're almost exclusively self-inflicted.
Sure. Well, yeah, that's my case too. But again, it makes me feel better to have a scapegoat that I can blame.
Well, it is. I mean, it's good to get stuff done, but it's good to be back. And we thought that we would get back, and there's been a lot of news, you know, of a lot of different kinds. But one of the most salient things going on in the world of politics these days is Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court and the corresponding hearings that have been going on in the last few weeks. Kavanaugh was nominated by President Trump back in when?
Yeah, May or June. I don't remember.
But his hearings have begun, at least committee hearings, right?
Yeah, the hearings are over. At least they were over.
Well, whether they're over or not is kind of what we're talking about today. Right. But obviously the most salient thing is that his nomination was proceeding apace. I think more or less everybody thought that it was a done deal, right? There wasn't a lot of controversy as to whether or not he would be ultimately win nomination to the Supreme Court, right?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest – so I actually watched most of the hearings. They just happened to fall in a time when I was not in class, so I flipped them on in the background while I was doing other stuff. So I can't say I paid, you know, full attention to them. But the big questions were, Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or I'm blanking on the other senator. There were basically three Democrats on the Judiciary Committee who are pretty obviously running for president in 2020, who asked questions as if they had some kind of loaded gun, but then never produced the loaded gun. Smoking gun, right? Not loaded gun. Mm-hmm. One of them, and I don't remember who asked which question, but one of them, it was very, have you ever had a conversation about X, Y, or Z thing? I think the Mueller investigation. Mm-hmm. And Kavanaugh said, well, can you be more specific? Like, I mean, the obvious answer is yes, of course he's had a conversation. And then it was, well, have you had a conversation in this particular building that's a law firm that he spends mm-hmm. a lot of time in? And again, the answer, of course, is yes, because he spends a lot of time there and there are lots of conversations. But even then, he's like, can you be more specific? Like, do you have a conversation of some kind that was inappropriate that I was involved in? And they never produced that. Everyone was sort of waiting on the big reveal, and mm-hmm. there was nothing. And same thing with Cory Booker. Had to do with the emails where he announced that he was going to release these emails to the public because the public had a right to know, and sort of famously, if ignorantly, declared, this is my Spartacus moment, thus showing that he is not familiar with the movie Spartacus at all. But as the chairman of the committee pointed out, those emails were already available to the public. So, I mean, it was kind of a non-event.
Maybe one of the more salient issues has to do with his views about executive power with regard to impeachment.
Right.
I suppose we'll get into this a little bit, but Kavanaugh played a prominent role as legal counsel for Republicans during the Clinton impeachment saga.
Right.
And then I think after that, so he was obviously involved in the impeachment proceedings, but then I think after that wrote about how he now takes a more robust view of presidential authority. Well, this is more about not impeachment, but lawsuits against a sitting president.
Right. So some of this came out in the hearing, although by and large, the questions were generally poorly phrased. So his answer was always, well, I can't answer that because that's a specific question. So I don't remember anyone ever asking him, give us your overall theory of, you know, criminal law and the president or civil law and the president. It was always in this specific instance, which, of course, as a judge, you can't answer that because that biases you down the road if such a case comes in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
The question is not so much can you impeach a president? Of course you can. And you can basically impeach a president for whatever the House of Representatives wants to declare to be a high crime or misdemeanor. The question was the regular legal process. Where does the president fit into that, particularly when he's acting as president, but also, you know, even as a private citizen? And that's where the question came up. But of course, the senators never really ask it like that because they're not interested in the answer, right? They're interested in the political posturing and the, taking a stand for the cameras rather than genuinely finding out what he thinks. And that's true on both sides. I mean, that's not just a Democrat thing.
Yeah, well, so the salient issue had to do with what he thought about that and question, which is obviously a salient question with regard to President Trump's current legal predicament.
Right.
And the fact that he had written, I guess, some academic articles suggesting a change in heart and a view more towards that the special obligations and responsibilities of the executive are such that any legal claims brought against him ought to be postponed until after his time in office, which is obviously a claim of special import these days. But in any case, so that was a little bit the issue du jour up until last week when Christine Blasey Ford came out and publicly made accusations that Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her when she was 15 and he was 17. And they were both high school students in Washington, D.C. Kavanaugh was going to Georgetown Prep, which is a pretty prominent Catholic boys' private school in the Washington, D.C. area. Christine Blasey Ford was going to another girls' school, but alleged that at a party, Kavanaugh and a friend, who were both extremely drunk, coerced her into a bedroom. Kavanaugh attacked her and was sexually assaulting her. His friend at one point tackled them both, and then she managed to free herself and escape and run away. Christine Blasey Ford is a professor of psychology, I think, at a school in the Bay Area, Palo Alto University.
Palo Alto, yeah.
Maybe. And so that has obviously become a pretty significant issue with regard to hearings and whether she should or would or will testify, whether the hearing should be postponed and all that. So we wanted to get on, talk about that, maybe talk about Kavanaugh's nomination in general, his background as a jurist and all of that. So Coyle, can you kick us off and just give us a little bit of background on Brett Kavanaugh's legal history?
Yeah, well, as you said, he had worked for Ken Starr during the impeachment, well, investigation of Bill Clinton. I don't know how much he was involved in the impeachment itself. Prior to that, he graduated from Yale with a degree in history, and then Yale Law School with a law degree, of course. He had also clerked for Justice Kennedy, as had Neil Gorsuch. So there's some connection there. I think they even clerked at the same time. although I'd have to look to confirm that. Following his time working for Ken Starr, he then moved into the White House, where he worked as a staff secretary, and was part of the White House process of finding nominees for the courts. So basically, his job was to find people for George W. Bush to put on into federal court positions. Eventually, he himself gets nominated to the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. He was not immediately confirmed, so his confirmation kind of dragged on for years. Again, I don't remember how long. Finally, in 2006, he was confirmed. It wasn't anything about him personally. It was just kind of the partisan wrangling that tends to go on, and is in fact still going on, although much less of that now that they've gotten rid of the filibuster. And then, of course, he is this July, I guess, was nominated to replace Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court. And that's what I have about his background.
But being on the D.C. Circuit Court is one of the more prestigious of the federal circuit courts.
Yeah, so it is and it isn't. It is because it tends to be a feeder for the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I don't know, slightly more judges that end up on the Supreme Court from the D.C. Circuit than from any other single circuit. It is not, because the reason for that is there's no senator attached to it to make recommendations. They're all presidential picks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So sort of yes, sort of no. It's mm-hmm. not that they are better judges.
Oh yeah, for sure. That, sure.
Yeah, it's just that's sort of the nature of the way the politics works.
Yeah, and just a little bit more generally about Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, he's somebody who has stamped his passport in all of the right places. He kind of has an impeccable legal credentials. I mean, going all the way back to, you know, going to this sort of very privileged, prestigious high school in D.C., and then Yale, and then Yale Law School, playing important roles in a lot of Republican administrations, a prominent role in the Federalist Society. He's somebody who has stamped his passport in all of the right places within the world of conservative legal jurisprudence, and a person who I think even amongst liberals or progressives admire him for his judicial acumen, even if they disagree with the substance of his decisions. I think it was pretty clearly the case that while Democrats wanted to slow play this and to do everything that they could for political reasons to derail him, I think everybody would have judged Kavanaugh to be a very skilled jurist, somebody who is certainly well qualified for the job, until last week, in which these particular accusations arose.
Sort of, right. I mean, I suppose technically we should say until July, when the letter was sent.
So maybe we should unpack that story a little bit. So Christine Blasey Ford wrote a letter to Dianne Feinstein, who is her senator, and talked about these experiences that she had when she was in high school, but noted that she wanted to remain anonymous. She wasn't willing to testify, but thought that people should know. Right. And Feinstein was sitting on this letter. It was known that she had a letter, but Feinstein herself was trying to honor Professor Ford's wishes to remain anonymous, and just sat on it.
Well, that's not exactly right. She sat on it. Nobody knew she had a letter until after the Senate hearings were over. So she, and I actually did see her Q&A session with Kavanaugh, asked several questions. None of them were leading in that sense. There were no hints mm-hmm. whatsoever that she had anything, which to me is, I think, sort of the surest sign that she at least is playing party politics here. She could have asked questions about the content of the letter without revealing the identity of the individual. I mean, that in fact, I would even go ahead and say that if she thought it were genuine, she would have been, she is morally obligated to have done that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I more or less take Feinstein at her word on all of these issues. I mean, if somebody said, I want you to know about this just so you know about this because I think this is important, but I do not want you to name me, then I think she has an obligation to honor that. And
yeah, so she doesn't have to name her.
No, so it's true she doesn't have to name. But even to bring the accusation in an anonymous way, I think it's to draw attention to the person in probably a way in which they explicitly said that she couldn't do. And
which is exactly what she does, just not during the hearing. Again, she waits until that politically right moment and then goes public and says, I've got this letter.
Well,
I can't tell you who wrote it, but this is what's in it. And it's serious.
Yeah, so I wouldn't describe, I mean, it's a little bit six of this, half a dozen of the other.
No. Like, this is the historical order of events.
Well, no, that's right.
She has the letter.
But part of what was going on there was that, like, it became known to different people that she had the letter. And I think different people...
The Washington...
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead. Washington Post.
I was going to say, the Washington Post gets their hands on the letter, which in and of itself raises questions. But again, Feinstein goes public before any of that. Right, so she's sort of first out the gate, and then we start seeing stuff coming in through media.
Well, Feinstein did go public that she had a letter, but that was only after rumors of its existence were already being spread by other people. So there were murmurings. So I remember following this because there were news articles about how that in the beginning it wasn't even Feinstein has a letter, but there were sort of rumors about, well, there were just rumors about an issue, and then it was Feinstein has a letter, but she doesn't want to share it. And then it got leaked. And I think Feinstein made her statement only when it was clear that she had something. And like, so you might say that that was all done very intentionally for political purposes.
I think it was obviously done intentionally for political purposes.
Well, yes.
I'm not saying that Ford did that. I'm saying that Feinstein did
that. Yeah, so I would say, I mean, it was certainly done for political purposes. The question is, who originally leaked the letter? Was it Feinstein or somebody else?
I mean, if there are two people in the world who had the letter, the person who sent it and the person who received it.
I mean, she might have shared the letter with other people, with other senators. But in any case,
maybe.
You know, I mean, to me, it's a little bit six of this, half a dozen of the other. I mean, you can blame, you and I can criticize people everywhere for political machinations like this, but it's basically par for the course and everybody plays that game.
Sure.
I mean, you can be sure that the exact hand would have been played in exactly the same way by Republicans.
I don't know if Republicans are that subtle, but if they had the political
skill
to
they'll just
to
decide
so.
Not to vote on a nominee.
Right.
But in any case, so I mean, to me, like, I don't even necessarily, it was certainly all driven by political machinations. My understanding of it was that it was leaked by someone else, but in any case, it does come out, and then Kavanaugh eventually decides that she's willing to testify, though the conditions and the timing of it are up in the air. It's worth pointing out that Brett Kavanaugh immediately categorically denied the whole thing.
As did the other witness. So the
So Mark Judge,
right,
is the name of the person who was in the room. And Mark Judge goes way back with Kavanaugh. They went to school together. They were high school buds. Mark Judge kind of grew up to be a relatively prominent conservative pundit. Is that the best description?
I mean, I know very little about him beyond what's been revealed in this.
Yeah. Okay. So you weren't familiar. You weren't familiar.
No. I'd never heard of the guy. Again, the first time I heard it, I thought it was the guy who created King of the Hill. I was like, wow, what a crazy coincidence, but...
Yeah. Yeah, so he... Judge, I mean, he was a pretty prolific writer for a number of pretty conservative outlets. He blogged...
Yeah, he was a Weekly Standard writer for a while.
Yeah, that's
he may still be, I don't know.
And was controversial, I guess, for things that he would wrote that people construed as being sexist or homophobic. He certainly has a colorful history. And he wrote a memoir before all of this. He wrote a memoir of his time growing up, talking very openly about alcohol and substance abuse.
Right.
Interestingly, talks about his time at school at Georgetown Prep. a time of a lot of alcohol and partying and stuff. Mentions Kavanaugh kind of anonymously, but not so anonymously.
Right.
In the book, there's a character.
It's like Bart O'Kavanaugh or something like that.
Yeah, Bart O'Kavanaugh, who he as someone who he parties with and throws up in the back seat of his car. But in any case, in the allegations that were brought against Kavanaugh, Judge, of all people, was listed as being the person who was in the room.
Right.
Judge immediately denied it. That was his first response. And then his second response was a little bit weaker, and he said, well, I just don't remember. Kavanaugh has denied the accusations and says that he wasn't even at the party.
Right. Well, I mean, he. I don't know that he specifically said that because we don't know which party. And that's one of the issues surrounding this is Ford's accusation as to what happened to her is very specific, right? Here are the details of what Kavanaugh did and what Judge did. Judge was also involved in the assault, in the alleged assault, I guess I should say. But all of the other details, you know, where was the party? When was the party? Who else was there? Whose house was it at? I mean, all of these other details are fuzzy, which of course is not unreasonable. Right. I mean, given the nature of that kind of trauma, being hazy on other details is perfectly understandable. But of course, it's also not unreasonable to say, what are the other details? Like, how on earth can we confirm this if you can't give us anything else?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so a couple things about Christine Blasey Ford's accusation. There were pretty specific details about the house. And she sort of talks about going up these stairs and being forced into this bedroom. And they're pretty detailed descriptions of the house.
I mean, sort of, right? They're also descriptions that apply to a lot of houses.
Yeah, I guess. You know, more telling is that she hasn't talked about this much with anybody. Again, not surprising. I think there are friends who said that, yes, she talked to me about something traumatic happening in her childhood in the early 2000s. And then more telling, she spoke with, I guess she had a psychologist who she was seeing, and she described Kavanaugh by name to the psychologist who recorded.
Again, at least the story we have is in 2012, she met with the psychologist, described the event, but did not name the person.
But said that this prominent person who's a judge and was, and at that point, I guess he had just been nominated to the DC circuit.
Yeah, I don't think she had even said that yet. If I remember this correctly, she told the psychologist that she had been assaulted, and I think the psychologist's notes that you know have also been released to someone, I guess the media, say something to the effect of she says she was assaulted by four men. So she did talk about an assault that you know corroborates her story, but her narrative and the narrative in the psychologist's notes, there's a disconnect there. She then later talked to, I think it was her husband, has claimed that. She mentioned that it was a judge and then eventually mentioned him by name.
She says that the psychologist in his notes got that detail wrong. And the point was that there were four people at the party and that she was assaulted by two people. And then he just misdescribed that in his notes.
Which is certainly possible.
Yeah. But in any case, also all of that was happening in 2012. And then, you know, part of it, there's just been a lot of chatter in public places, like on Twitter and on Facebook, people posting things and then those posts being deleted. But so there are people who've gone on Facebook and said, yes, I was at school with Christine. People were talking about this after it happened. But then those posts get deleted and people say that they don't want to talk about things. So there's all of the kind of chatter that follows these kinds of things.
And almost all of those, at least the ones I've seen reported, are variations on I was in school with Christine, something terrible happened, or she's not the sort of person who would lie, or so on. Or I was in school with Kavanaugh, he's not the sort of person who would ever do something like that.
Yeah.
None of those things are actually useful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're useful in a general way. So I suppose one question, there are a variety of questions that we might ask here. Maybe one of the most direct is whether you think the accusation is credible.
Right. And kind of the way I see it is there are, you know, four different options. One option is certainly the he did it and he is now lying about it. Another option is she is lying about it. Another option is it happened. She was sexually assaulted, but she is misremembering who it was, which, of course, trauma, mm-hmm. right? That would be reasonable. Mm-hmm. And then another option is the sexual assault happened. He actually did it, but he was so drunk he doesn't remember. Mm-hmm. Again, also certainly credible. Mm-hmm. So I don't know which of those I believe. I think that this is a serious enough issue. It does merit investigation. We were talking about this a little beforehand. I don't necessarily know whether or not a something like this done in high school would be disqualifying for a nominee for anything, mm-hmm. Particularly if it's a one-off event, and particularly if he, you know, remembers it and then repents of it. And yes, I did that. I was an idiot. I'm sorry. So mm-hmm. on. What probably should be disqualifying is if he actually did it, he remembers it, and now he's lying mm-hmm. about it. Like, that, I think, is much more problematic. Mm-hmm.
Can we hold off on a second about whether the charge, even if it were true, whether what somebody does in a drunken stupor when they're 17 should disqualify them from sure. the Supreme Court 30 years later?
Sure.
Just hold off on that for a second. And I mean, just on the credibility of the threat, like your fourfold description of the possibilities, I think is pretty much exactly right.
Right. I mean, there are literally three or four people in the world who can know for Judge Kavanaugh, and then if it was someone else mm-hmm. entirely, mm-hmm. and that's it. I mean, those are literally the only options.
Yeah, and then I guess I would say that I think we could narrow down from those four, and I feel like there are lots of reasons to think that, or. I don't think there are credible reasons to think that she's just straight up lying about it. And part of that has to do with the testimony that, yes, from people, that she's talked about it before, the fact that she was willing to go through marital counseling. She alluded to something to her husband well in advance of this. There were notes from a psychologist that even if they don't name Kavanaugh by name,
notes that are also contradictory, right? They are not just a slam dunk proof of. Like, if you accept the notes as evidence, you got to take the full thing.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it seems really, really implausible. And that was in advance of any of this. And Kavanaugh was somebody, but he certainly wasn't a big somebody back then.
Right.
It just seems incredible to me that she would just straight up, here's somebody whose politics I don't like. I'm going to make up this whole fantastic. I happen to know him a little bit in high school. I'm going to make up this whole fantastic story out of whole cloth. You know, more credible to me is that because of the trauma of the events, she's misremembering. And it wasn't Kavanaugh. It was Judge, or it was somebody else. I feel like it's pretty obvious that something really bad happened to her when she was 15. You know, more credible to me is that she's misremembering. But even that, I don't necessarily find particularly credible.
Yeah, and I'm just going to be an agnostic on all of this. I don't know. Yeah. Short of a confession from someone, I don't know, and I don't know that there is a way to know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, the one thing, this is a little bit independent of the specifics of the case, but, you know, there are all of these people who've come out and been like, I know Brett Kavanaugh. He would never do something like this. That seems like a very naive view about human. And that has nothing to do with Kavanaugh specifically, or conservatives or liberals in general. That's just like a general thing. I mean,
sure, everyone is capable of something
like
this.
Yeah, virtually,
especially when you're drunk.
Yes, yeah, especially when you're drunk. Virtually everybody is capable of virtually everything. And I think a lot of people just have a hard time processing the idea that, like, good people can do bad things. But, like, that's silly. And that's certainly no illusion that any Christian should be under, you know? Good, you know, quote-unquote good people, I'm doing air quotes with my hands, do bad things all the time. Nazis loved their children. They kissed their children on their foreheads before they went off to work. People are able to sort of stitch together a kind of a veneer that's very different than the turmoil that they experience in their psyches. I mean, we're all like that, right? We're all presenting a particular kind of...
So in this case, people assault someone and then lie about it. That happens. People make up that they've been assaulted and lie about it.
Yes.
That happens.
Yes. Yes.
So, again, nothing should really be off the table given the evidence available.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the issue that that you mentioned earlier. Should this even be a disqualifying act? So you might say, look, whether he did it, whether he didn't do it, this is immaterial. You can't hold against someone something that happened when they were drunk and 17 years old. This was the line that Rod Dreher took. He tweeted out something that was shockingly personal in a lot of ways. But did you see this tweet?
I saw it. I don't remember what he said in it. I remember seeing it and thinking, that's just Dreher. I dismiss probably 40% of what he says.
Oh, is that right? Really?
Now, the other 60% is really good. But the, you know, yeah, probably 40, 50%. Ever since I listened to his Christian Humanist Profiles interview with Nathan Gilmore.
Uh-huh.
I forget which one it was. It might have been both of them. They've interviewed him twice.
The Ben Ops one and an earlier one?
The How Dante Can Save Your Life one.
Yeah.
I think that was it. Where he basically talked about he converted to Eastern Orthodoxy basically because he wanted something with more touchy-feely emotions and superstition.
Well,
so ever since then, I've started being a little more hesitant about just blanket endorsements of Rod Dreher.
He's your kind of conservative.
He is, but again, 60% of the time.
Anyway, super listener Jeffrey Carter brought this to my attention on Facebook. Roger tweeted this. In high school, I was physically bullied by 17-year-old boys in a sexually humiliating way, but not sex. It affected the direction of my life. They never apologized. Still, I wouldn't hold that against them if they were nominated for the court. They were boys.
Yeah, he expanded on that in an American Conservative article and was a little more explicit about what had happened and what that looked like.
Mm-hmm. That's like the most that's like such a perfectly Rod Dreher tweet to me. Like on the one hand, there's this incredibly humane disclosure of brokenness, which is kind of amazing, and then to me something that's patently ridiculous. But anyways, maybe you didn't respond that way. But I mean, so Dreher has this perspective. Look, boys will be boys. That's effectively what he's saying. You can't so he might say something like this: if he did it, that's a really horrible thing. But you can't hold a 17-year-old responsible for an act, for a drunken act like that. It shouldn't disqualify.
Well, 30 years later.
Yeah,
right. You should hold them responsible at the time.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But it shouldn't disqualify a person 30 years later from holding a seat on the Supreme Court. Discuss.
Well, again, I think that comes down to that question of, does he honestly remember and he is just lying about it? Mm-hmm. I think that is certainly disqualifying. I think integrity is more important on the Supreme Court, or at least it is more important on the Supreme Court than elsewhere because of the life appointments thing and because it's so hard to remove them once they're on the court. Whether or not an action from 30 years earlier, assuming that it happened, assuming that he remembers, if he is repentant over it, I think, yeah, probably not if he's repentant. If it happened 30 years earlier and he gives the sort of Donald Trump non-apology of that's in the past, why are you still harping on that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where it gets difficult.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, here's where it'd be easier if I were a liberal Democrat coming out of the 90s, I could just say, like, this is the Clinton model. It's fine. Whatever. We'll move on. But I'm not. So I don't get that easy out. What do you think, Ed?
I should say the thing that really bothers me about the Dreher quote is just the breeziness with which he's apologizing for the behavior of adolescents.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
I will say that sort of the issue doesn't matter. I mean, I do think that's a little complicated. If he had come right out, like the minute it dropped, and said, look, it's true, it happened, assuming that it did happen. Let's say it played out this way.
Right.
I was drunk, I was stupid. I look back on that event with horror and shame in my life. I apologize and I'm going to apologize and try to make this right. That would be one thing. in some ways.
But he didn't say that.
Yeah.
Right. He not only did he not say that, he also didn't say, "I was drunk a lot. That could have happened. If it did, I'm sorry."
Yeah.
Right. It was a categorical, "This did not happen."
Yeah. I mean, you know, even then, but a little bit more generally, I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, we might morally analyze that situation, and I think rightly come to the conclusion that the behavior of 17-year-olds is sort of importantly different than the behavior of 37-year-olds or 47-year-olds. And obviously, the act would be starkly different if it happened yesterday than if it happened some 30 years ago. But, you know, this isn't just a job at a company. This is a particularly unique role in a particularly unique position. And in some ways, I mean, it's even different than a political position, I would say. Like, there's even a way in which I think, morally speaking, we are right to hold judges to a uniquely higher kind of moral standard. And if it happened, yeah, I just don't know.
Nobody's, so you would disqualify him
if it
even
happened,
if he were repentant?
I mean, yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know.
So you're,
if he were like, really... That's a little bit hard, but I think I would. And I think, honestly, like, if you're really repentant, then you probably should be like, "And I withdraw my nomination."
So if that's our new standard, so you're saying if it happened and if he had repented, he would still be disqualified. Now, obviously, it would be preferable had he repented, you know, 25, 30 years earlier, if it had actually happened. But if that's the new standard, is there anyone who will ever again be a Supreme Court justice?
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never sexually assaulted somebody.
I've never sexually assaulted someone. I'm sure there are other things you could come up with that I'd be like, "Oh yeah, I did that thing, and I don't remember it." I don't think I've ever, you know, beaten anyone up either. But presumably, physical assault would be in the same category.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would know. I don't think it's in the same category. I mean, I think sexual assault is uniquely evil. I mean,
these are the sort of less helpful things. Seriously beating someone, you don't think that would be worse than the events she described?
So attempted murder, yeah, that's pretty bad. That's disqualifying. Getting into a drunken fist fight at the bar, I don't know. But those to me are pretty obviously...
Being a member of a gang.
I mean... What kind of gang, what kind of crimes were committed?
I don't know what gangs there are these days.
Did the person kill somebody? Then, yeah, that would be disqualifying.
Right.
Was somebody hanging around with gang members in their neighborhood in part because they just grew up in this neighborhood and everybody was aligned with gangs and it was difficult not to be, you would put yourself in harm's way and you didn't actually commit a crime, let's say a major crime? That's a little different.
Yeah, or you were a member of a gang, but you associated with people who did awful things, and you did the lesser stuff, right? You petty theft and burglary and so on.
That's different to me than at the age of 16 or 17. That's a little bit different to me. I mean, if you...
Yeah, that's fair. And here's where it's not easy to sort of weigh levels of whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And obviously, like, and it would be one thing if, like, and that was like a part of a person's narrative, and it's sort of like, I was in this really bad place when I was younger, and... you know, that would be one thing.
Well, presumably Kavanaugh could have said something like that.
Again, that's right. And if Kavanaugh had always been like, you know, when I was in high school, I had a real drinking problem, and
did some awful things.
And I did some awful things, and I feel horrible about it. But I've changed my life, and that's a little bit of. And if that was like a narrative that he'd been telling for the past 10 years, that's different. But
okay, so it's not necessarily disqualifying.
Yeah. So I guess I'll nuance that thing.
Of course, that's not where we're at, right?
That's,
I mean, that's all assuming that it happened and assuming that he had admitted it, which is not an assumption that we can, at least at this point, you and I, from our various seats in Bolivar and
Santa Barbara,
cannot make. The bigger question, of course, is the accusation disqualifying?
Well, I mean, not in and of itself, but I think they should stop. And they should have hearings, and people should testify, and there should be an investigation. And then on the basis of all of that, people can make a decision.
Right. Which is what they're doing.
Yeah, so I mean, I actually haven't read the news today. Are they going to hold the vote, or are they postponing the vote pending an FBI investigation and or testimony? So she had agreed to testify in the abstract, or her lawyer at least said, that's the better way to put the point. Yeah, she'll testify. And then I think they invited her on like Tuesday, right?
Well, Monday. I don't know when they invited her, but the Senate committee is going to hold another day of hearings.
Yeah.
I believe it's going to be Monday.
Yeah.
And this is sort of her point to show up and give her story.
Yeah.
Her moment to show up and give her story. What the last thing that I heard, and I also haven't looked up the news today, but the last thing that I heard was that she will testify kind of on the condition of an FBI investigation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which I suspect that the Senate will go ahead and extend the invitation to her without regard to whether or not there's an FBI investigation. It's an interesting thing to ask for. I was talking to the wife a little bit about this last night. So the FBI, they're not like a neutral arbiter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't go to them when you need someone to decide between two competing parties.
Mm-hmm.
But they do background checks as part of this confirmation process, especially for Supreme Court judges, although they do it for all candidates for federal office. And by almost all accounts, this is an incredibly grueling and thorough process. So I was talking to the federal district judge in, I don't know if I should say where it was, a federal district judge in Missouri. How about that?
A senior administration official?
Yeah, no. Well, he's a judge.
No,
so
I'm
no,
joking.
He's not.
That was like a Trump op-ed leak. Jerk.
Yeah. An anonymous judge in
Wait a
in
second.
Missouri
you're saying
says,
that you're talking to Mike Pence?
Yeah. He says, don't worry, the government is still operating. The judicial branch is solid. And basically he said when he is not a Supreme Court nominee, but when he was up, you know, they were calling people that he had known in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's if the other people at this party were friends of Kavanaugh's, then they have likely already been interviewed by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
So an opportunity for this to come out has come out. Now, if they were casual acquaintances, mm-hmm. or he didn't know who they were, didn't remember being at this party, or, mm-hmm. or didn't mention, I mean, there are all sorts of ways you could slip through.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were good friends, if they were close associates, then this is already what would normally happen in an investigation has already been done.
Yeah, though I guess, I mean, there's a big difference between the FBI. You know, I feel like I was interviewed by the FBI for somebody who's maybe, I mean, this was a totally different deal, but somebody who is applying for a federal job or something like the CIA. But like, it's one thing to be approached by the
FBI. Yeah, this is far more in-depth.
Yeah. No, obviously. But it's one thing to be approached by the FBI and be like, hello, you know, we want to talk to you about Brett Kavanaugh. And then to ask what would be pretty general questions, right, about his character and things that happened. And it's another thing to say, hey, were you at this party, you know? And then that's a very different deal.
Right.
And certainly if you were a friend of Kavanaugh and you knew about this, you wouldn't go out of your way to talk about it.
Sure. But again, it's not the same thing as saying that nothing has been done.
Yeah. For sure.
And the other side of this is that outside of the background check, I'm not an expert in what the FBI's purview is, but they don't really do non-criminal investigations, to the best of my knowledge. And this is both statute of limitations, I assume, is up,
mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be under FBI jurisdiction mm-hmm. anyway. It would be under state of Maryland
mm-hmm.
or wherever it was that it happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, this would be under the auspices of the role that they play in just vetting.
Yeah, so it would be part of the background check. Which could, I mean, it could have been done by now had they started on it.
Yeah.
Given the priority and so on.
Yeah.
But that said, the Senate committee has basically said, look, come, we'll give you a chance to speak your piece. The Republican chair, Grassley, has basically said we promise to respect your dignity and so on and treat you decently and all of that. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it will depend on whether or not she shows up. If she doesn't show up, I would imagine the vote will go ahead. If she does show up, I would still imagine the vote will go ahead, but I think it will be a little more heated.
Yeah, and then who ends up casting, how people vote, I think is.
Oh, I don't think that'll affect. I mean, do you honestly think any senator has changed their vote based on this?
Jeff Flake, yeah, for sure. There, I mean, for
all he said was we need another day of hearings.
Yeah.
Same thing with Suzanne Collins.
Yeah.
And then the follow up was, she needs to be there, and variations on it doesn't sound like there's much to her story.
So I mean, I think it can make a difference. I mean, I should also add that she willingly sat a lie detector test and
before her story came out,
yes.
Which is another of the kind of conspiracy side of it that honestly I think we should mostly dismiss. But of course, the Kavanaugh supporters are up in arms about why would she have done this if she weren't trying to prepare to torpedo use this as a political move. It doesn't prove anything either way. It's reasonable to do if you know this is going to come out.
Sure.
Reasonable to do if you're trying to make a political move. I mean, either way, again, it doesn't actually help us decide anything.
But I think it makes sense to want the FBI to pursue the normal background investigation, maybe in a more pointed way with regard to this. And I guess if I were going to testify on this issue and I was telling the truth, I would want the FBI to sort of go through that process and to like force people to sort of sit down with the Federal Bureau of Investigation and to answer questions. And
right.
You know,
I think the Senate hearing will fill much of that function.
That's right.
Put
but that's
people under oath.
People are under oath, but there's a question of who's going to testify, right? So Mark Judge, for example, I think he's already declined. There's a question about whether he would even be invited, but I think he should certainly be invited, obviously. But I think he's already said that he wouldn't testify.
Right. But there are ways around that. I mean, they can issue a subpoena.
Yeah. That's right. So they could do all those things. But I guess if I were going to testify, and like I would want to force everybody to sit before a relevant governmental authority, whether it's the FBI or whether it's the committee itself, having sworn an oath, I would want that pressure to be on people.
Well, and maybe that's another good point to make. The only relevant government authority here is the Senate.
Well, again, there's the FBI that conducts the background investigation.
Yes,
and I would be scared out of my pants
whatever.
If the FBI came to my door and said, "Hey, we want to talk. We have these questions for you."
Yeah, but I mean, whatever they come up with goes to the Senate.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I mean,
that's
the Senate
right.
is the final,
but,
because there's not going to be anything criminal.
Yeah,
coming
that's
out
right.
Of this.
But you know, that's but I want them to have that so that when I sit down and I give my piece, like that's there, and like if they want to say no, that didn't happen, then that's fine. But like, it's easy to say that on Facebook or in the media. It's another thing to sit in front of an FBI officer or to testify themselves in front of the committee and be like, yeah, that never happened. So I think it's not unreasonable to want the investigation to have proceeded, and not
sure.
unreasonable to wait a week. But in any case, so what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I suspect they will hold it. Well, I know they'll hold another day of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it will go ahead on Monday as scheduled or not, that I don't know. Or whether they'll push it off later. I'm reasonably sure that they will vote to confirm or vote not to confirm, whichever way the vote's going to go, before the election. So I think in the next couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
we will see a vote, a confirmation vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that the vote numbers will fall out exactly the way they would have fallen out before this happened.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. It only takes a few votes. I think in some ways, and look, I mean, this is a purely political calculation for every Republican and for every Democrat. And for certain kinds of senators like Flake or Susan Collins, maybe it tips the political... Flake is... He's free. I mean...
Right.
He's the happiest person in the world. Like
in the Senate, anyway.
Yeah. you know, maybe it tips the political calculus. Maybe they didn't want to vote for the person, and now they have a political out not to vote for the person.
Yeah, you've also got the guy from Montana, right? The Democrat tester.
Yeah, yeah.
The Democrat from North Dakota.
Yeah, they're,
so
yeah, yeah.
Collins and Flake are not the only on the line ones.
That's right, and so the process repeats for them as well. Maybe this gives them a reason to sort of cast a different vote than they might otherwise feel like they have to for political reasons. So I don't know, but I'm actually going to boldly predict that he does not join the Supreme Court.
Oh wow!
For whatever reason, either he withdraws his nomination, or they vote and he doesn't make it. It's not like I'm super committed to this. I just kind of have a feeling that he's not going to make it.
Oh yeah, and see, I think he's going to make it. Barring some kind of surprise reveal of here's a picture of the event and process that Mark Judge snapped, or someone else coming forward and saying it was me all along or something like that, which I guess that would put him on the court anyway.
I think
I still don't think would affect the people who vote for him versus people who don't vote for him.
Mm-hmm. I think she's going to testify eventually. And I mean, we're not going to get scientia, right? We're not going to get scientific knowledge. And I think at the end of the day, she's going to come off as being credible. And, however, it's all politics, right? And it's either going to be the case. I mean, one of the really striking things is just how reserved Trump has been so far. And everybody in the White House, he said that Kavanaugh's gotten a raw deal, but...
Oh, he's spoken – that I did see today. He has basically come out and said she's a liar, and if she weren't lying, she would have gone to the police with this in, 80, whenever it was. Mm-hmm. And
was that today?
I think that was today.
Okay, so that literally just happened up to this point. So, and then, I have to say from his perspective, I guess you don't want to be seen to lose. It's also a very delicate political calculation for him because, this is the kind of thing that could make – the coming election even worse. If
he's really good at delicate political election calculations.
Yeah. He's a regular Cicero guy. But anyways, in some ways, why didn't he just say, I guess I understand why actually, because the political calculus for him is that he's got to get this guy on. And if he withdraws him, then they're obviously not going to get anybody nominated before the midterm elections. And then after that, all bets are off. Because it might be the case that Democrats are in control of the Senate.
Well, Democrats won't be in control of the Senate until January if they win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so he will still have time to get someone else put on.
Do you think
they would I think Mitch McConnell would go over to the White House and drag it out of him. Do whatever it takes to get.
He would certainly try. We know how Mitch McConnell thinks about the Supreme Court and what he's willing to do to get his man on it or woman for that matter.
Steal from the Democrat playbook and run with it to its awful logical conclusion.
I saw those Facebook posts, and I think that's just silly. It's
historical reality, Ed.
Well, yeah, that's fine. And so you can go back to the Democratic Senate not confirming Bush nominees. Is that what
H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
That's the first time, anyway.
Yeah, and is that the first time that's ever happened? We can't draw the line back a little bit further?
Aside from Robert Bork, right, who is the person who really changes this process, to the best of my knowledge, it's the first time we have kind of a partisan, we're not going to confirm these things, that becomes a pattern. There are isolated instances in history. But the first time we have kind of a continuous stream of that starts with H.W. Bush.
Yeah, I mean that's just silly. And so Republicans had never done anything like that before that.
So
the original sin of all of this literally happens.
It's that, and it's the killing of the filibuster, right? Because that's the tool the minority had up until it was killed.
Yeah, but why did they kill the filibuster?
They killed the filibuster because the Republicans were blocking Obama's lower court nominees.
Yeah,
so the Democrats killed it for everyone.
Look, they killed the filibuster, which is true, but it's not like congressional practice had been normal up to that point.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
My point is that it's crazy to think that one party is more craven and political than the other.
No, that's certainly true. And it, I think I said this on Facebook. In an ideal world, we would go back to presidential nominations get investigated for insanity or some kind of deep-seated treasonable whatever. But otherwise, they're automatically confirmed.
You know, I want to hold the standard a little bit higher than that. But anyways,
I mean that is the older standard. Like as long as the judge is not flagrantly corrupt or mentally imbalanced, they get approved.
And so they could nominate the cashier at the Walmart if they wanted to.
Well, again, as long as they're judges, right? They're able to do the job. And then Robert Bork comes along.
Well, you don't have to be a judge though. I mean, you can nominate anybody.
You do. You can be judges are most common, but also law professors.
Yeah.
Happen sometimes, and solicitor generals and so on. But again, that's also sort of expected. And if you want to throw that in and say, all right, make sure that they are actually qualified to be judges. That's why Bush's Harriet Myers nomination didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, right.
She had no business being a judge, and the Senate rightly sort of laughed that out.
In some ways, I might have just talked myself out of my skepticism that he's actually going to send, but for the sake of hot takes on a podcast, I'm going to stick by my call. I don't think he gets confirmed. But
yeah, I mean, I've been wrong a lot lately, but I'll say I think he does. I actually get to give a talk in a couple of weeks about what it's like to be wrong all the time. So
really?
We have these coffee talks on campus that the honors program puts on. Mm-hmm. And I've been asked to give one, and they told me I could pick whatever topic I wanted. And honestly, I don't want to have to do a bunch of research on an academic topic. So I was thinking about what I could talk about. And I was like, I've been wrong about politics a lot lately, starting with Donald Trump's election. I didn't think he would win. And then the stuff that went on with our governor here in Missouri, I didn't think he'd resign. I mean, you could just go through this pattern mm-hmm. of these sort of big predictions that I've been wrong on. I'm like, I should probably talk something like that. So yes, I think Brett Kavanaugh will make it onto the Supreme Court. Take that, listener, with a giant grain of salt. This will either continue the pattern of me being wrong, or it will finally break the pattern.
We'll see. We'll know in a short period of time.
Yes.
Okay. Well, with all of that, we thank you for listening to another episode of the City of Man podcast. The City of Man podcast are members of the Christian Humanist Radio Network, an awesome consortium of shows. Check out the website at christianhumanist.org to see what's going on with our show and other shows in the network. Equally, please visit our iTunes page. Give us a review. Helps other people find the show. Or if you want to reach out and yell at Coyle or me or ask a question or suggest a topic or any of that, you can email us at cityofmanpodcast@gmail.com, or even easier, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/cityofmanpodcast. And with all of that said, let me remind our listeners to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and to render unto God those things that are God's. Thanks a lot for listening.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of high